Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Megan Tiber-Ind. I represent the petitioner in this matter, referred to in our briefs as LDG. May it please the Court, we are here today because the immigration judge's decision that he lacked authority to adjudicate my client's waiver of inadmissibility pursuant to her U visa application is contradicted by the plain language of 1182D3. My client plainly qualifies for a U visa, assuming she can obtain the waiver of inadmissibility. So the immigration judge's decision stands between her and a legal pathway to remaining in this country.
So your essential argument is just that D3 overlaps, in a sense, with D14, that the D3 is available for all sorts of things, whereas D14 focuses in on these U visas, and also that unless the statute specifies that authority is exclusive either to the Secretary of Homeland Security or the Attorney General, then we have a system of concurrent jurisdiction.
That is our position, Your Honor. Our position is that there are two pathways to the waiver of inadmissibility here, one vis-a-vis the service, the other through the immigration judge pursuant to his or her authority under D3.
So there are other instances in which there are these same two pathways, right?
That is my understanding, that there are other instances where both exercise, the IJ and the service exercise concurrent jurisdiction.
And particularly for waivers.
Yes, specific to waivers. And D3 recognizes that the Attorney General, the immigration judge in this circumstance, exercises broad authority over waivers of inadmissibility under that statutory provision.
If that's right, let me just ask you. As I understand it, U visas were set up under new legislation in 2000, right?
That's right.
And that's when what is now D14 was enacted,
yes.
Right? And that specified back in the original legislation from 2000 that the Attorney General shall decide all these things, both the visa and the waiver of inadmissibility, right?
And in 2000, yes.
In 2000.
Pre-2002.
Now, if your theory is correct, then the statute was literally redundant for those years. D3 providing a concurrent path for determination of a waiver by the Attorney General and the immigration judge, et cetera. And then D13, now D14, saying the same thing with respect to inadmissibility and waivers, right?
Given Your Honor's analysis, during that period of time, there would have been redundancy in the statute.
So
what's significant, though, mm-hmm. is that upon the creation of the DHS in 2002, there was no change made to the statute. And we've seen
not to D3.
Not to D3 and not to D14. The change to D14 was made to the service, but a change was not made to exclude the language in D14 that says in the discretion of the Attorney General.
Well, actually,
that language still remains in D14.
Well, actually,
I mean, it seems like a Scrivener's error.
I think it's a codifier's error, because the legislation in 2006 said paragraphs 13 and 14 are amended by striking Attorney General each place it appears and inserting Secretary of Homeland Security. So I'm not sure exactly how this happened, but Congress made it pretty clear that that's Homeland Security throughout in what's now D14. So I'm not sure exactly where the error lay. But it seems to me that given that legislative history, a different interpretation here is Congress created U visas, intended the process to be covered by what's now D14, and in 2006 gave it to the Secretary of Homeland Security.
Well, Your Honor, assuming Your Honor's position that D14 was a Scrivener's error, and our position is that we have seen change to D14, turning the reference from Attorney General to the Secretary, and Congress has not corrected that error, assuming it was one, or otherwise made a change. Putting that aside, it doesn't change the authority that's granted under D3. We don't read D14 to be a limiting statute such that it limits authority only to the secretary. We see it more as an ameliorative statute in that it expands the pathways by which you can obtain a waiver of inadmissibility in the U visa context. And I think that that's consistent with Your Honor's point about the creation of the U visa statute itself, that it would grant broad relief. And so we think that Congress intended to leave the language as it is and to not carve out an exception in D3 specific to U visas, because it wanted to allow these multiple pathways to
Why? Why do you want two different agencies exercising the same discretion through completely different procedural mechanisms?
We think that the two pathways recognizes that Congress recognizes the immigration judge's broad authority to adjudicate waivers.
It's simply an efficiency measure. So for the people who are really just in U visa efforts, they can go to the Secretary of Homeland Security. But there are quite a few people who come up through the Executive Office of Immigration Review on several different theories. Maybe they're seeking a work visa, or maybe they're are undocumented. Maybe they're seeking asylum as well as the U visa. Maybe so by having both pathways for those people who are anyway going to be in front of the immigration judge, it allows consolidation of the full case rather than peeling off the U visa part of the case to Vermont, having the asylum case hypothetically, you know, sitting there before the immigration judge. So it seems to me that the argument in other parts of the law that allow the immigration judges to adjudicate waivers is essentially an efficiency-based rule.
Your Honor's point is well taken, and I think it's consistent with our position that for those individuals that are in removal proceeding, the immigration judge should have the authority to provide relief to those individuals.
They're in a removal proceeding because there's some other problem. Pursuing a U visa isn't enough to put you in removal.
That's correct. You don't necessarily...
It's to get people to come forth to the police and help solve crimes in the community. So there's a subset of people who are in removal proceedings for some reason. We know that there are a number of them.
That's true, Your Honor. And necessarily being an applicant for a U visa does not mean that you are a litigant in removal proceedings.
Sure, you could be a permanent resident alien seeking a U visa, or you could be somebody who's on some sort of...
You could be traveling
limited.
To the United States.
You could be traveling. You could be on a student visa, and you go and you seek the U visa for a lengthier period of time than your student visa might cover. I can think of a lot of reasons why you might.
The IJ can't grant a U visa.
The IJ does not have the authority to grant the U visa. The U visa statute is clear that the ultimate discretion lies with the service.
So what's going to happen, if you won, LDG would have several hurdles. She would have to convince the immigration judge to grant the waiver. And, you know, there are obviously some reasons not to, because CIS has maintained no. But if she succeeded there, then all she can do is go over with her waiver back to CIS, right, and seek the actual U visa.
That would be the position that she is in. However, the service has acknowledged that but for the waiver, my client is eligible for the U visa. In denying the...
Eligible for, but without a necessary right to it, correct?
That is correct, Your Honor.
Nobody has a right.
There is no right to a U visa. It is eligibility, but the service in its letter, which is in the record at 157, admits that the ground for denial of her visa is that she is not admissible to the United States. We also think that there is an important dichotomy here between the services proceeding, which is the submission of an application and documents to an individual that sits in an office and never meaningfully interacts with the individual, versus that meaningful interaction before the immigration judge for that person in removal proceedings. The immigration judge is allowed to weigh the quantum and the quality of the evidence.
But you're not saying that all the rest of, I mean, there are huge numbers of people who are simply going to go through the administrative process. There's nothing wrong with that, is there?
There's nothing wrong with that, Your Honor, but we do recognize that for those people in removal proceedings, there should be a certain level of procedural protection, and we think that granting the immigration judge the authority to adjudicate the waiver is consistent with that. Now, the government argues...
Is she still appealing? I was unclear about this administrative appeal that you mentioned in your brief. Is that ongoing?
My understanding is that she has an appeal pending before the AAU with respect to the denial of the I-918 form. I understand...
The I-198 form is the waiver?
Help us out.
Neither do I, Your Honor, so I'm trying to help myself through this as well. My understanding is that it's...
I know we have two layers here. You've been very careful to separate the U visa itself from
yes.
the waiver of inadmissibility. And so
yes,
we're all
Your
very
Honor.
Clear on that.
Yes. My understanding of the appeal is that it relates to the denial of the D-14 waiver by the service.
D-14 is the waiver.
That's
okay.
right. And that the position of my client in the AAU appeal is that there was some legal error in the determination of the D-14 waiver, that the service didn't consider all of the proper elements.
In other words, she's trying within DHS to fix this at the same time as she's trying to assert that there's concurrent jurisdiction.
That's true, Your Honor.
The Department of Justice and the Department of Homeland Security.
That's true, though it wouldn't be...
All right. I don't mind doing that at all, but I'm just trying to be clear.
Nobody has ever accused the system of being efficient. So.
Well, in some ways, there would be some added efficiency because because of the concurrent jurisdiction, these things are happening at the same time.
So we do it twice.
Well, one could look at it that way, Your Honor, but to have the process moving, we think, grants some added efficiencies here. We also think...
In response to Judge Wizzle, I mean, you're in Health and Human Services...
DHS. Homeland Security. Yeah.
Homeland Security and INS, but your focus here is in INS, right? I mean, I...
The Executive Office of Immigration Review and
right.
the DOJ. So, of course, back in the old days, before DHS, everything was under the Attorney General. INS was... You know, the Executive Office of Review was, and then basically the INS parts went off to the
but
Homeland Security.
But this is not more efficient, though, is it? I mean, concurrent jurisdiction is what we're really talking about.
We are talking about concurrent jurisdiction.
It's more efficient only in that the same person gets one office that adjudicates. I mean, we've seen right hand not knowing what the left is doing in this agency more times than I would like to count. And so it would be... I guess you'd have to be following a rule. Whoever rules first wins or something. I'm not sure how you would resolve potentially conflicting results between DHS and the IJ.
Well, Your Honor, I think that you have a couple of possible circumstances. In this particular case, the service has acknowledged the waiver is what stands between her and the visa. Assuming she can obtain the waiver from the immigration judge, presumably the service would grant the visa.
And it would respect the immigration judge's adjudication?
It would and it should. We would hope that the service would acknowledge that the process of adjudicating the waiver before the immigration judge was indeed a meaningful process where there was hopefully presentation by counsel and evidence and weighing of the evidence and credibility versus what I discussed before,
well,
the services process, which involves none of that.
That sounds wonderful. But some people for whom a U visa is relevant can have histories and ties that might raise security concerns. So it's at least not at all inconceivable to me that Homeland Security might say, whatever the immigration judge might have thought, we're not going to give you that waiver or we're not going to give you the U visa. And there would still be the opportunity for DHS, Homeland Security, to exercise that independent judgment, right?
Ultimately, the service maintains its independent judgment, its discretion to grant or deny the waiver at the end of the day. We think
I thought you were saying that even if the IJ grants the waiver, now there's a waiver, but the Department of Homeland Security always retains the discretion to say, we're not going to give you the visa,
right?
No matter what, because we think you're going to go blow up buildings or, you know, whatever they may think.
I may have misspoke, Your Honor. Ultimately, that decision is
exclusively
vested.
In other words, we have a valid waiver, but we don't care.
Yeah, but we don't care. Exactly. That's certainly
you could face that circumstance. We don't think that you would in this particular case, but it is a possibility.
Yeah. Okay.
I see that I'm into my rebuttal time. Thank you so much.
Mr. Norwood, a brave person to specialize in this area of the law.
Good morning, Your Honor. Honors. Anthony Norwood with the Department of Justice.
Not Homeland Security.
Not Homeland Security. I don't represent Homeland Security.
Part of our federal government.
I'm employed by the Attorney General. And typically in these cases, I represent EOIR and am defending a Board of Immigration Appeals decision, which I am, and the immigration judge's decision, which I am defending now. But they have held, as you're well aware, and you obviously know my arguments, that they don't have, the immigration judge and the board doesn't have jurisdiction to grant the waiver of inadmissibility.
Where do we get that from when there clearly are other areas where there is concurrent jurisdiction? And even, I'm looking, maybe this is just cherry picking, but there's the matter of Aurelio decision listing cases where there are waivers adjudicated by the IJs, and then also later cases in which, now I'm not talking about U visas in particular, but D3 has been understood to cover quite a number of areas where there are waiver issues.
That's correct, Your Honor.
So where do you delete this from it?
You delete this from it because the statute that created the U visas is clear that it's with a determination of the Secretary.
Please don't argue that it's clear. I mean, it may be that that's the most sensible reading in your view. That would be a perfectly good argument. But.
Well, that it is my argument that it's by far the most sensible reading, and I think the court has already pointed out.
All D3 says is an alien who's inadmissible under subsection A of this section, but who's in possession of appropriate documents or is granted a waiver, may be admitted temporarily in the discretion of the Attorney General. So that's really broad.
That is broad, Your Honor, but the D14, our argument is that she's applying for a D14 waiver.
Only the Secretary of Homeland Security. It authorizes the Secretary of Homeland Security to grant these waivers. No question about that. And the Secretary of Homeland Security does so through the appropriate offices on a daily basis, probably. But I don't see any language in D14 that says only the Secretary of Homeland Security can in this nightmare of statutes that we have governing the immigration.
Yes, Your Honor. It says the Secretary of Homeland Security shall determine. It does not say 212D14 does not say only.
Imposes upon the Secretary of Homeland Security an obligation to see if a ground of inadmissibility exists. He can't just go willy-nilly, or she can't go willy-nilly governing U visas, but she can waive that for certain people if she thinks it's in the public or national interest to do so. But where that says that this process ousts the Executive Office of Immigration Review from the authority to do this in what I'm calling these more complex cases that come up in removal proceedings. I'm sure you've seen many of them where there are a number of different grounds raised. You know, I'd like asylum, I'd like withholding of removal, I'm entitled to protection under the Torture Convention. You know, and I also have
my criminal conviction wasn't that bad.
Yeah, so I'm not really an aggravated felon. I mean, people say all kinds of things, and so peeling off the U visa from that seems to me to be a bit perverse.
It's our argument, and it's reasonable under the statute that the U visa is exclusive with the secretary, and it is not a broad visa. It is a short-term non-immigrant visa, and it's
right.
Very
it's a 5-year, right? But then certain people manage to leverage it into more than that, right?
Yes, that's correct.
How many people are we talking about in a year who would be subject to this kind of decision, who are eligible or are seeking a U visa who face inadmissibility problems and need a waiver?
Your Honor, I don't have that number. There have been, over the years, there have been very few cases. There are only a few reported cases, two from this circuit and one from the Ninth Circuit.
That's what percolates up to the
that's
court.
What percolates
does DHS keep statistics that are available for the public to?
I don't know, Your Honor. This information is confidential, and it's It's not as readily available as some others.
I can understand you wouldn't do it by name, but I could also imagine DHS saying, you know, last year CIS processed 2,000 U visa requests.
Is it, what is it, an annual cap of 10,000?
There is an annual cap of 10,000, that's right.
Okay.
But you don't know.
But I don't
know. We can look.
Really, I want to point out also that the regulations, I think, are I won't say clear.
We have an odd situation here with the regulations where you want, you know, it's like saying, you know, the Department of the Treasury should grant deference to a regulation issued by the Department of Commerce. And I don't see why, just because DHS has issued a regulation, the Department of Justice has any obligation, why their interpretation is within the our rule, our against Robbins rule.
Your Honor, it doesn't. The U visa doesn't refer to the Attorney General, so I don't think that.
I'm just saying you argued, among other things, that the rule of deference under our against Robbins, and you know Smith Kline, et cetera, was due here, but ours about deference to the agency's interpretation of its own ambiguous regulations, and I don't see why a regulation of the Department of Homeland Security is the immigration judge's own agency.
It's not specifically his own agency.
Right. Right. Well, it's not at all. So it's, unless we've merged the Department of Justice with DHS along with everything else, and I don't think we have.
No, I think it's clear under these regulations and this statute that we don't want to.
I mean, the regulation stands as something, I suppose, but we're going to assume that the ceiling isn't going to fall in on us and continue with the argument.
Or it's Halloween and it's changing.
That's right. Let's see if I have anything else I wanted to ask you.
I may just say, this is sort of a general informational question. Maybe it doesn't make any difference, but are you finding that this I shouldn't say competition, but distinction between Homeland Security and DOJ and immigration more frequently these days?
Yes, there's more frequent discussion between agencies, and it goes at different. It percolates up different ladders. I'm not blowing my cliche.
Administratively and in the courts.
Yes. But and then there are more agencies. I mean, they're more. Used to be the INS. You mentioned the INS. Now
right.
It's CIS and
yeah. Long
and,
gone.
And ICE and the Attorney General hearing the cases and trying to decide the cases. There are no further questions. The court obviously
that's
knows my arguments. Thank
Apparently
you.
Not. Thank you very much. Anything further, Ms. Tiber-Ind?
Thank you, Your Honor. A few very brief points. One, we know that 10,000 U visas have been adjudicated each year for the past 2 years. They have reached the cap. If the court wants the answer, we can find out how many of those individuals are in removal proceedings and submit those in supplemental briefing to the court if the court is interested in that.
If you think you can find out,
if we can find that information, we will submit it.
The order requiring you to do that is 10 days enough time or 2 weeks or?
14 days would be helpful, Your Honor.
All right, 14 days it is.
Two other points. The government claims in its response that D-14 is clear, that jurisdiction is exclusive to the service. But, Your Honors, that's belied by the service's own regulation. We see at 8 CFR 212.17 that the service acknowledges a waiver of inadmissibility may be obtained under D-3 or D-14. So the government's asking this court not only to read exclusivity into D-14, but also to read it in D-3, but only in the U visa context. But that's not supported by the statutes, Your Honor. The other point I'd like to raise is to Your Honor's question about deference. There is no deference here, in our opinion, because the statutes are explicit and should be read to mean what they say. But if the government... the government or the service in this instance should not be afforded deference because their interpretation is unreasonable. They're asking for the court to read something into these statutes that doesn't exist. And our position is that any lingering ambiguity, should the court find it, should be resolved in favor of my client. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Thanks to both counsel. We will take the case under advisement.